Young Entertainment Professionals.
You're listening to the Young Entertainment Professionals podcast, a series featuring the next generation of creative and business professionals in music, TV, and film. Hear their stories on navigating the industry with the help of the Young Entertainment Professionals Network.
It's just cool because, like, everybody's got a different story, a different journey. But instead of, like, taking it and being like, man, I want to do what they're doing, it's like, oh, no, help. Like, we help each other and you, like, lift each other up, you know, like, rising at the same time.
Welcome, Thomas Fincham, to the Young Entertainment Professionals podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. We're going to start off with just, like, the first thing that I found out about you. So I didn't know this. I've known you from performing.
Yep.
And obviously blown away by your songwriting talent,
well,
performance talent, and everything. So obviously excited about talking about that here as well. But you're an Olympian.
I am.
You were an Olympic diver.
I was a diver. I always tell people when they figure it out, I'm like, yes, that's my past life. Because it really was, you know, from age 9 to 22, that was all I did. And I really wasn't doing much music back then because, I mean, when you're at that level, there's no real time to do anything like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was training from 7:30 till 4:30 every day. And, yeah, I mean, it just worked out. I got to go to the Olympics. I mean, it was a lot of hard work, but it was one of the coolest experiences of my life. I still remember to this day walking out at opening ceremonies and, like, just it gives me chills because it's like I was... all that hard work had paid off. I was so proud to be an American in that moment. Just, you know, being out there, and it's like my team is our whole country. I was representing everybody, and it was just a surreal moment. And yeah, I mean, it was just crazy.
Did you grow up loving music? Kind of.
I did.
Midst?
You know, I always loved music. I was such a big fan of music, and I was always singing. Maybe not in front of people, but, like, I loved singing. And I remember, you know, when I was young, listening to the radio and adding my own ad libs or, like, trying to, you know, add these things into songs. And now, like, looking back, hindsight 2020, I'm like, I guess it kind of makes sense how I got into songwriting, or, like, it just worked for me.
Right. As far as being an athlete,
yes.
Like, what made you choose that first? Like, was it something that you were good at, or that a hobby that you really enjoyed and it just developed into that? Or, like, how did that happen?
Kind of. You know, I my sister, Lindsay, she is 5 years older than me, and she was an amazing gymnast. And, you know, as her younger brother, I would just follow her and watch her do stuff. And I was like, ooh, I want to do that. And I guess my mom, I don't know if I even believe this story because it sounds crazy now having nieces and nephews about this age. But my mom said I taught myself how to do a back handspring when I was 3. And she was like, oh my God, I've got to put him into some sort of lesson so that he doesn't kill himself. And so I started gymnastics lessons, and they didn't have a competitive team. And I'm a very competitive person. So I'm sorry, this is a long story, but I'm, like, so used to this story because when I, like, used to dive, they'd be like, how did you get started? And so, like, this story's
so
like...
you've told this story.
Oh, I've told this story
times.
A lot. But it's still, it's funny because it's like no one asks anymore as much. So it's fun to get to tell it and relive it. But my grandma, she taught me how to dive off the top of a houseboat at Lake Cumberland. And
okay, can I just first say that you faced so many fears
before,
like, age 10?
Yeah, it was, I know, but, like, when you're that young, sometimes you don't get scared. You're at two ends of the spectrum. You either have no fear or, like, you're scared of everything. And so I was at the, like, no fear spectrum. And yeah, she taught me how to do that. And then my mom signed me up for lessons. And when I walked in to do the lessons, they were like, well, we think you should kind of be on the team. And then, seriously, like 3-4 months later, I was in Canada competing at my first international meet, and I won. And it just, I mean, it was, I don't know, you can't even, like, make up that kind of story. It just happened naturally, and it progressed really fast. 14, I did qualify for the Olympics, but I didn't get to go because they changed the rules that year. And then I kept going till I was 18 and I went to the Games. And then in 2010... is when I tore my shoulder. And that's when I first started writing songs. In 2010, I was 20 years old, I think, the first time I ever picked up a guitar. and I just had time to do anything else in my life. And I still had a sling on, and I was like learning enough chords to play songs, and I fell in love with it, and I just wrote tons of really bad songs. And but by the end of that 6 months, I had put together a band and started playing shows in Indiana, where I'm from. And I was like, in 2012, no matter what happens, I'm retiring and I'm moving to Nashville to do this. It just was like an aha moment. I knew it was what I was meant to do. I knew it was my next chapter, and it just made sense, and I never really looked back.
You mentioned something earlier about like being on the no fear spectrum.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how that set you up for the music industry, in a sense of just going 100%. Into this?
I mean, it's a scary thing to move to a town and be immersed into this industry that you know nothing about, because I really didn't. Everybody has their, you know, preconceived notions of what the music industry is, but like any job, it's like you don't learn it until you're in it. And so moving to Nashville was just this eye-opening experience for me, because it's like all these people are here writing songs. But instead of being scared, I was inspired by it. And instead of being intimidated, I was like, how do I get to know these people? How do I get into the rooms? What do I need to do to become a part of this, what seemed like a small family when I first moved here? I felt like such an outsider. And I was like, how do I get into it? And I just kept meeting people, and you know, one thing led to another, and then I feel
now
like that's just kind of, yeah, now yeah. I'm here in a podcast talking about music.
Yes. Was Yep ever a part of that?
I had heard about Yep, and I had been to all of the Yep, like, Rewind shows.
Nice.
When I remember, like, the hate, like, at the beginning when it was, like, Marin and all of those, and thinking, like, this is so cool, and I wanted so bad to play on it, but, like, I just didn't really have anything going on, and it was like hard to meet everybody. But it's like through networking, I got to know Amelia, I got to know other people, and it just gave me that opportunity. I played the Christmas show, and it was so much fun.
I do remember that.
It was so much
fun.
That
was honestly one of my favorite Yep shows.
It was so much fun. And it was cool because it's like even just all the people in the band, all the people you're playing with, it's like they're friends, and it's cool to be all of us together and kind of this, you know, similar goals, similar dreams, similar love of music. And it's just fun to have that kind of group to
bounce ideas off.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy because that's like, we're competitors, but like we're also family and friends. And it's such a cool thing because that's like, it's different than any other industry.
Did you still have a pretty tight-knit community in your diving community?
100%. You know, I trained and competed against the same people for my whole life, but music's just a different thing. You know, you share part of your soul when you're in a room. Like I could be writing with two strangers and I'm like telling them about how my dad just got sick or how, you know, like these kind of things. And you're like, wait a second, I don't even tell this to people that are my friends just normally in conversation. And you just like bare your soul. And it's a cool thing.
Do you remember the first person you wrote with?
Or
like first song that you wrote that you were like really proud of?
Man, that's kind of hard. I do remember writing, I think one of the first writes I got set up with was a guy named Gavin Slate.
Oh, yeah, I know Gavin.
It's funny, we got put together and it was one of my first co-writes I was set up on. So I like didn't know what I was doing. At that point, I had written pretty much by myself. And he was such a nice guy. And of course, we wrote this pretty like a beautiful ballad, because like for the longest time I feel like all I wrote was sad songs. And
but he's like, that's his shit.
He's so good at that. And it's just funny because we did that, we wrote, and then I got my publishing deal, he signed over wherever, I think he's at
Anthem now.
It's Anthem now. But and we like got put together again by our publishers, and we were like, wait, that's crazy. And it's just funny how that works though. Like even sometimes like you have friends that you write with, and then your publishers will put you together, like not knowing that you're like best friends. And we're like, this is awesome. I guess they have, I'm like, I guess we should have done this earlier, but
like a long time ago.
Yeah. But it's funny. And I mean, it's cool seeing, you know, where I was when we first did that and now writing, and just kind of like those benchmarks to be like, yeah, I've regardless of what I'm doing, and if I consider it success, like looking back at that, it's, I've come a long way. So it's crazy.
For sure. Really quickly, because I want to get into obviously the music that you're doing and the music that you've written for other people, but switching from one industry to a totally different industry.
Yes.
I feel like there's a lot of wisdom there that people can hear who listen to this, who maybe want to get into the music industry, but come from a totally different background and feel like, oh, I don't know, like if I have what it takes to enter into something that I'm completely not unaware of. That I'm completely unfamiliar with.
Yes.
So can you speak to that and maybe offer some encouragement to somebody who's looking to take a new
100%.
Route?
I mean, for me, I think it, I was just going to do a diving metaphor and that's so lame.
I was going to do one later.
It literally is just like, I mean, you know, well, I mean, like it's literally just like jumping off the deep end, and it's like, you have to do it. And like, once you get in there, you learn as you go. Like, no, and anybody who acts like they know what's going on really doesn't know what's going on. Everybody's figuring it out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just being confident and taking those opportunities and those chances. For me, I know when I was a diver, it's like I had a very regimented routine. And so like, I'm like, okay, how can I carry that over to what I'm doing now? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I still do that. Like I try to be very methodical with my co-writes. I try to, and it has been that way since I moved to Nashville. 'Cause I went to school at Belmont. Ever since I went to Belmont, I knew my main goal was to have a publishing deal, to be writing, to be doing the artist thing. And so I had morning classes and I had night classes so that I could write every day. Just because I knew like I had to be submerged into that group of people. And I think, you know, it's finding out what that group is you want to be with and whatever, and how to place yourself into it and kind of just doing whatever you need to do
to get there.
Yeah, to get there. Like, I mean, you don't take no for an answer. And I know that's a lame thing to say, but it's like the more you keep trying, it's going to happen eventually.
And you've already, I mean, obviously developed that discipline.
100%. Yeah. And I mean, it's just crazy how many like things are similar between industries. Yeah. You know, as much as you feel like you don't know it, it's like you go in and you realize, yeah, nobody knows it, and you just figure it out.
I was at the Source Awards a couple of nights ago.
Okay,
and,
cool.
Like, there, a lot of the speeches were speaking to that idea that like no one knows what they're doing. You should be nothing but kind.
100%.
Because you just don't know like what everyone is either struggling with or trying, what goals they're trying
person.
To reach. And just, take it easy and take your time on things and don't feel like you have to like achieve all the time.
And I mean, I think another thing that like for me, you come into town and I was like, a year like before I came to town, I was like, oh, that's a publishing deal, that's what that is. I didn't even know what it was, you know. And then I was like, had it made up in my mind, I was like, that's what I want. And it was crazy because there were so many times when I thought it was going to happen and I thought it should have happened that it didn't. And just being patient is a thing that I have learned is so important. And it's not like the kind of like being patient and just wait around for it, but it's like being patient for the right opportunity. 'Cause I think there were times when things could have happened, even especially in the music I'm putting out. It's like I had my EP done for a year practically before the first song came out. And it's just like figuring out, or I wrote for 3 years at Concord, writing songs, getting into the groove, figuring out who I was as an artist, and just being patient. And they gave me that ability to be patient. They didn't push anything. And so it helped me find who I was as an artist. I know I just went off on a tangent.
No, but I want to know how your voice developed over those 3 years, and maybe something a little bit more specific that changed in that time, like that evolved.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the greatest things that Brad Kennard and Jen Duke at Concord and what used to be Razor and Ty did for me is they wanted me to go into a room as a writer with the hope that maybe the songs could work for me, but also knowing that the best song that day should win. And I think that is such a good mentality, because so many people go in and they're like, I'm not into it, it doesn't work for me. But to me, I'm like, if Keith Urban wants to cut my song that I just wrote, that's only going to help me. Right. And so that was just like my mentality from the beginning. And so it really just let the song win. And so I went in every day and with the same mentality I had when I moved to Nashville, which is that I could write songs that change the world. And I mean, that's a big kind of crazy thing to say, but I do want to think that way. And if I ever stop thinking that way, I don't want to be making music. Like,
it gives you like a broader scope of
creativity
too. You're not so specific to what can I write for me or what can I write for this.
And sometimes songs are just like in the room and they're meant to come out regardless. And sometimes they accidentally happen and you're like, I never would have thought I would want to do that. And then it sonically becomes this thing that you love. And I think for me, like, I remember the first song I ever put out, Past the Front Porch, it had this like unique sonic quality that I was like, that actually mixes up with these two other songs and then goes really well with these other two. And I just like kind of had that another light bulb moment where I was like, I have a project. I'm ready to go talk to my publishers and tell them, hey, I have these six songs that I think are an EP. And I like, so I put them on like a burnt CD and I like drove around for like a month or two, like listening to them in the order that I wanted. So, cause I knew like once I told them, I was like, I was ready to go. And I think they respected that. They knew that, you know, I had thought through it and I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I had the songs picked. I knew what it wanted to sound like, how to flow, and had my producer, Andy Skibb, who is amazing. And it kind of just like hit the road running after that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being prepared and really thinking through like the why behind what the timing.
Yeah.
Of course.
Timing.
This podcast is brought to you by Starstruck Entertainment. For over 30 years, Starstruck has developed and managed talent, including singers, songwriters, producers, and recording engineers. Our current artist roster includes Kelly Clarkson, Blake Shelton, Maggie Rose, Kale Dodds, Bryn Cartelli, Dave Barnes, Caroline Cole, John King, Emily Ann Roberts, and the newly signed duo Pryor and Lee. You can keep up to date on all their latest releases by following at Starstruck on Instagram or visit starstruckentertainment.com.
So Lo Cash cut your song Casino Girl.
Yes.
What was that like and how did it get to him?
It was pretty crazy. I mean, I wrote that song with Matthew West and AJ Proust, who they're so amazing and I love writing with them. And I mean, I've listened to Matthew and known his songs for a long time. So I remember writing with him the first time and it was just, I was coming home from Indiana and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to think of an idea that's not going to be like stupid or something. And so we wrote our first song together, which actually is on my EP. And then the second time we got together, Matthew was writing for his, not the newest album, but the one before it.
Was it the one from last, All In?
Maybe. I'm looking
at it. He was by a pool, so.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm thinking, see, it just makes sense, right? He was even by a pool. 100%. It makes sense. But so we were actually riding in a cabin, which was super cool. He texted me and was like, hey, come to this cabin. And I was like, okay, awesome. And we went there and he threw out a couple ideas and they were trying to do, you know, a song like for, they were like, this would be a really good pitch, you know, which is like typically when the three of us are in there, we kind of just, that's not our mentality. And then he said, Kissing a Girl, which it was originally Kissing a Girl Goodnight. And he kind of said exactly what he was thinking. I was like, I'm in, let's do that. I'm into that story. And so we just started and I fell in love with that song. When I like sang the demo, I listened to it over and over and I turned it into my publishers and they loved it and, you know, had sent it out to everybody and it kind of had been put on hold maybe once or twice with a couple different people, until Jen Duke at Concord, she had a meeting with Carol and Mobley and like had already gone through all the songs that she was like allotted for the pitch session. And they were like, oh, I guess they're looking for a family kind of song. They already have one, but if it gets beat, you know. And Jen was like, guys, all of the people in her plugger group, she was like, can I play one more song? And they're like, yeah. And she played it and Carol Ann loved it and gave it to Lo Cash. They put it on hold and they were like, we're definitely recording this song. Cause I guess they like fell in love. They both have daughters. And so like the third verse where it's like, it's all about a little girl and kissing her goodnight. Yeah. And they like said, they're like, we're going to cut it. It's going to be on the record. And then they did cut it. It went on the record. And then they switched to BBR now.
Yes.
And so like it was on the record before they moved. And so then we were like,
longevity of this song.
Is it still going to be on the record? We don't know. And it, thank God, it did make the record. And yeah, that was my first real cut. And it's so crazy. I went to the album release party and it was just fun getting to meet them and hear them tell me like how the song affected them. And I saw they performed it once and it was on a YouTube video and like the guy was crying. It's awesome because it's like a song that was so precious to me, and to know that someone else can feel how I felt about it and it mean that so like mean so much to them. I'm like, that's what writing songs is about.
Is
like
that,
being like, able to take that feeling and have someone else feel it and portray it as well. Like that's so
like,
cool.
That's your ultimate goal.
Yeah.
In songwriting.
It's crazy.
It.
Yeah.
So let's talk more about some songs you've released.
Yes.
Watch your Instagram. It's great branding.
Thank you.
Mothers
did.
Is really awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Mothers is a really special song to me. I have the best mom in the world. And I think, honestly, it was just a really special day in the room writing that. I wrote it with Andy Skibb, my producer, and Kat Gravitt. And Andy, it's such a weird story because like typically like, you know, you're in rights and people will call you and you're like, ignore. And like, you'll just put it off till later. But like in that right, Andy's mom had called him and was just like calling to check in too. It was nothing, but he was like, I gotta answer. You never know. Like it's my mom. But she just wanted to check in. Kat got a picture of her son sent to her from like school and I didn't get anything, but my mom didn't do anything, but I love her and I was probably already in that mindset. But it was just like crazy coincidences like that, that we were like, man, this song is in the room today. We're meant to write it. And we all just felt very inspired because we have strong women in our lives that have shaped for sure mine, my mom. You know, I've learned so much from her and continue to learn so much from her. And I, you know, call her whenever I need any help with anything. And she always answers and tells me, you know, her opinion.
Honest truth.
Yeah, honest truth. Actually, we were talking about it in my write today. I was like, there's so many times when like my mom's like, this is what's going to happen. I'm like, no, I'm going to do this. And then you call her like 2 weeks later and you're like, you were right. You know, it's that kind of thing. But she really has just taught me so much. And so that song was kind of honoring mothers and the relationship between a mother and a son and how much, you know, what a mother does can shape how you treat women and how, you know, just you learn how to love. And I think that's what it's all about.
Well, by the way, you're engaged.
I am.
Congrats.
Which actually this song, it kind of has taken on a whole new meaning. Like every time I sing it, you know, it's kind of means something else. And now it's like, I sing it and I'm thinking of her and how she'll be one day as a mother. It's pretty crazy because she's a nanny and she's like amazing with kids. So it's just fun to watch that and know someday down the line,
yes,
that will be us. But yeah, it's crazy. But also very exciting.
Has she ever worked in the music industry?
She hasn't, which is also an amazing thing to have someone outside of it who she's also just a radio listener who can listen to my songs with an opinion that's not like, I want to hear this amazing lyric. I want to hear, she wants to hear what a radio listener hears. And so like, there are times when, you know, I thought I had this amazing lyric and she's like,
okay,
cool. And I'm like, and as much as it like bums me out, it's also good to know, because if someone who loves me says that, probably means someone who cares nothing about or knows nothing about me, if they hear the song, isn't going to love it.
Right.
And just kind of, you know, teaches you to not be as precious with your songs and know that, you know, as many people love them, as many people are going to hate them too.
Right.
So.
Do you have a mentor, whether that be like a songwriter or, you know, someone that's on the business side that you look up to that kind of gives you that same type of criticism that comes from an honest, caring place?
I think, you know, just the team I've surrounded myself with have definitely, from the start, always been very honest and very helpful. So, you know, Brad Kennard, he's the first person that really believed in me and gave me an opportunity. Same with Jen Duke. And Jen and I, you know, she's the type of person that I can text at midnight with an idea or a thought, or if I'm freaking out because I'm like, why didn't that song go on hold, or you know what I'm saying? Right. And they'll listen to me and hear everything I have to say. And I think that's what makes that bond so special with them. And then actually, one of my agents at WME, her name's Haley Teske, and she and I are actually both from Indiana, and she has been with me since the start.
Wow.
And so it's pretty crazy because she just was promoted as an agent last year, and so then she got brought onto my team, and I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I know I have people that are like, she's been on my side since day one. So it's cool to just have people, and you know, you realize when people stick behind, like beside you, that it's important, especially in this industry, because you doubt yourself so much.
All the time.
Just to have someone who's like, shut up, you're fine. Like, shut up, you're fine.
Or like, don't overthink it.
Yes,
or like, don't
exactly.
rush into this because you want to get out of this feeling mm-hmm. or out of this situation, you know?
And I think a lot of that comes from like your peer group you surround yourself with too. Because I mean, like when I first was starting out, I can just think of a couple friends that it's like, you know, I signed a publishing deal before one of them, and they were like super bummed out, but it was cool because they were asking me questions, and now that friend signed their publishing deal and they've signed a record deal, and they're like, I'm like, man, that sounds awesome. And they're like, so it's just cool because like everybody's got a different story, a different journey. But instead of like taking it and being like, man, I want to do what they're doing, it's like, oh no, help, like we help each other and you like lift each other up, you know, like rising at the same time. So it's
amazing.
Cool. It's cool.
So many good quotes.
Yeah.
Yes. You are obviously going to be on the road a little bit.
Yes, definitely. Starting to play more shows, which is exciting.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I have, you know, started playing a lot more. It's fun getting in front of people, especially new people, doing those opening slots kind of. I just was out with Tyler Rich, which
nice.
Was cool.
Yeah.
We were actually in Indiana, and it was funny actually. That's when I had to go, and on the way there I picked up the engagement ring at the show, and then I came back home, and then like the next day I proposed. So I'll always remember that show. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to be in front of new people and have those people, you know, start following on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and engaging in the content, and you know, saying that they became a fan from the show. So it's super cool.
Can you talk about your fan base?
Yes.
For just a little bit, and how you sure. developed that. How many of them know that you have an Olympic background? Do some of them come from that?
For sure.
Mostly,
I think it's a mixture. You know, I think now it's mainly people who are music related.
Right.
But there's a lot of them that started, you know, back at the core of it was from the diving, just naturally. But it's crazy because it's like, if that would have been like 5 years later, there would have been, because like Facebook was just starting out and like becoming big. Same with Twitter. Well, not Facebook, but Twitter was kind of getting bigger
right.
during the 2008 games when I went. And I just remember getting like thousands of Facebook requests, you know, but it's like now it would have been a whole different story. Like, because you see, like, the Olympic people, and they have, like, millions of followers
right.
because, like, that's, we're in that social world. I don't know what the...
So, it's just, like, oh, it's a second world,
essentially. Yeah, for sure. And so, like, I was kind of at the start of that, but the, you know, main core of my fans at that time were definitely diving based, but it's fun getting to bring people in, because I feel like music is so much more of like letting you know who you are as a person and getting to know them on that level. And so it's kind of, you know, behind the branding on social media, it's like, what can I do to like give you a piece of a little bit of who I am? And so I've tried to be pretty thoughtful with that.
Yeah.
You know, starting like I actually scrubbed my socials and started over when I was starting the whole push towards the
your
first song coming
and
out. Mm-hmm. And like the first thing I came out with was this video that kind of like in 1 minute sums up who I am as a person and the first song that's coming out. And it has my dad, he's narrating it.
That's the front porch.
Yeah.
Front porch
yes.
song. Yeah.
So it's funny too, because like my dad actually had sent me an email and like had said all the things that he was narrating. And I was like, okay, hey dad, randomly like 2 years later, I was like, can you record those as voice memos and send them to me. He's like, what? And I was like, yeah, can you please do that? And so like we actually just used that and then built the video around it to tell the story instead of me just sitting there like overdubbing my voice being like, I love music,
and I'm from India.
Yeah, exactly.
I used to ball like exactly. It's just, yeah, that's not
so it was and it's really fun to be creative in ways that aren't music too. It like helps my brain work in different ways, but that kind of stuff's super fun for me.
Oh yeah, it's
cool,
makes it more personable and people can hear the message behind your
100%
behind your song. So where can people follow you?
I'm everywhere. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, Instagram. Should I say like what my handle is? I think for most of them, it's just at Thomas Fincham. Mm-hmm. But Twitter, it's Thomas_Fincham.
Oh, yeah, because like,
I did that. I just did it way back in the day because you're like, back then you didn't think about like, ooh, that's smart branding. And then it got I tried to change it, but they said if I changed it, then it would take away like the verified thing.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Which actually is funny because I actually like, it's silly, but I had a fake Thomas Fincham once on Twitter, and I'm like. And people, like, I would play shows, and people would tag the wrong one. I'm like, no. And it was, like, the stuff that they would say. It was, like, all talking about diving stuff. And it was, like, I'm so tired from a long practice today. I'm like, who is this person? And why are they caring to impersonate me? Because no one cares. Like, but... I guess it made me feel cool for a second. No, I reported them. They're gone now.
Oh, they're gone?
I did, yeah. Because I kept having people like follow them and not me. I'm like, that sucks.
You know what would be funny, though? Down the road, you recreate.
Oh, I should.
A new, like, okay, cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, go follow Thomas Fincham.
Thank you. Are we done?
Not yet.
Oh, you just said it like I thought we were done with something.
No.
I was like, okay, cool.
I didn't want it like cold in it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So guys, we're about to end this podcast. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah,
Thomas.
Thank you.
So excited about like your new music and everything.
Thank you for having me. That was fun.
Now we're done.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Young Entertainment Professionals Podcast. To get connected, visit yepnashville.com and follow Yep Nashville and Yep Los Angeles on social media. I'm your host, Libby Ulrich, and until next time, discover, cultivate, accelerate.